Welcome back to another episode of Straight to the Point. And in this one, I have my first ever guest interview. Now, to say this guy has been hard to get a hold of is being a bit of an understatement. I flew him out to Tenerife for 10 days, I think he came out here for, with the sole purpose of nailing him down for a podcast, and we still somehow forgot to do it. Not quite sure how he managed to forget when it was the only thing that we were meant to do. But we have now got him here on Straight to the Point. We're going to be talking all about marketing, business, success. He is a serial entrepreneur. He's a property investor, a property trainer, runs a multi-million pound property trading company. He's been a mentor to me for the last 2.5 years that I've been in business. Jamie York, welcome to the Straight to the Point podcast.
Cheers, mate. Looking to be on it. I'm honoured to be your first guest. It'll either be amazing or I'll ruin your reputation in one episode. We'll see. But yeah, hit me with it. Let's get straight to the point, mate.
With the host being me, you can only go up, right? I mean, I am the principal.
That's why I came on, yeah. I look good around you.
That's why you hang around with me, right? So, but yeah, for me, obviously, Jamie, we've known each other for 3 years now coming up to it, I think, isn't it? Around about that sort of time frame for when I got started.
Yeah, I think it's just over 3 years now. So yeah, been a while.
Going quick, bro. Growing quick. So I obviously know who you are. But for my listeners, they may not know who Jamie York is. I mean, you're a YouTube sensation now. So, I mean, you are knocking on a lot of people's doors. But, I mean, who are you? Where have you come from? And why is building a sustainable business, which I'm going to talk to you about in a bit more detail as we go. But who are you? What have you done?
Okay, cool. So yeah, I'm definitely not a YouTube sensation, but yeah, I've got a YouTube channel out there that's doing fairly well in the grand scheme of things. But yeah, for those who don't know me, my name is Jamie York. I started as a property investor when I was 19, which is 10 years ago now. I know I still look beautiful and young, but as I'm starting to lose more hair by the day. I'm getting old and haggard. I'm getting angry more. I get hangry more. But it's been a great journey. I started in property investment when I was 19, bought my first property in 36 Burdett Street in Burnley for £21,800. And just sort of chipped away and built it up from there. So I had a background where most of my family are pretty blue collar. So they work on property and stuff like that, you know, laborers, electricians, plumbers, scaffolders, plasterers, that sort of thing. So I picked it up, I was good with my hands. And I just sort of built from there. So I started getting into investing, started doing something in the property world called deal packaging, which is where you find a property investment, you make sure it's a good property, and somebody else buys it from you. So think about it as an estate agent, but you represent the buyer rather than the vendor, and you get retained that way. So I started building that up. And most people in the property industry, they usually do that for a short amount of time because they see it as, oh, I'll do that until I make a bit of money, then I'll really get to property. And that was my mindset. But by the time we were able to do that and we were making 10 grand a month, 20 grand a month, it was like, hold on, why would we stop this? Why don't we just buy the ones we want and then keep on building? And so we did. You know, we carried on reinvesting, barely take a penny from the business, just reinvest, build it. Fast forward to today, we're doing very high figure, five-figure months, if not six-figure months. So last month was the first month in 7 months that we've done less than 100 grand. So not that that's a bad thing, you know, it's still cool. It's still money, right? It's still good months. And then, yeah, so we started doing that. And as you said, I've kind of become just obsessed. You know, people say serial entrepreneur. I am just obsessed with this. I don't really give a shit about the money. It's a nice byproduct, if you like. But it's building the other businesses, so some fitness businesses, some money lending businesses, which I really enjoy doing, you know, helping out people get to the next level and making a good return. And then, yeah, I train other people to do it as well. So in business sense, which let's face it, I doubt people care about my star sign coming on here and shit like that. But business sense wise, that's sort of been my journey up till now.
I love it, mate. One of the things you touched upon there, which I actually want to go a bit deeper on, is that obsessiveness, right? Now, what I see in a lot of business owners is this whole kind of like laptop lifestyle. I work hard for now, and then in 2 years' time, I won't have to work anymore. Like they almost do it to be able to generate this passive lifestyle for themselves, right? And one of the things that I've noticed, especially in the different businesses that I've been and being around you as well, is that it gets you so far being like that, But actually, when it comes to scaling, I think, especially in the world of social media right now, it's made to look a lot easier than it actually is, right? And that obsessive nature becomes so important. I mean, what are your thoughts on entrepreneurship right now in terms of, I guess, the difference between like lifestyle entrepreneur and like empire builder type work? Is there a balance to be had? Because for me, like, we're all in obsessive nature, right? I mean, what's your thoughts around it?
Okay, so I think it's dividing up entrepreneur and business owner. So I'd say every successful entrepreneur is a business owner. Not every successful business owner is an entrepreneur. And they are different things. So I am a business owner and an entrepreneur. So an entrepreneur is sort of like you're living and breathing this stuff. Like you cannot. And by the way, this, it's not good or bad. It's just, it's my obsession. So, you know, I live to facilitate that. Whereas a business owner, it's there to facilitate your lifestyle, okay? And you can have that balance. I prefer blend, you know, because people talk about burnout and stuff like that. You don't get burnout from stuff you love. You know, I feel tired every now and then, but when you were a teenager, you would have been knackered at school, falling asleep at the desk, but you always managed to play that extra game of COD, right? Call of Duty before you go to sleep at 2 a.m. So it's where your passion lies. So I don't think there's a right answer, if I'm honest, Chris. Like, I don't think it's a case of, you know what, you need to work 50 hours, 60 hours, work however fucking how much we want, right? And it's like, so for me, I'm obsessed with this stuff. For like, even when I go home and I'm watching a film, I'm thinking about something, I'm getting creative. And so if you want to do that and that's your personality, then great, pick something you're passionate about. You don't need to love it. I think you need to love it, but something you find you're naturally drawn to, right? And how do you find out that? By doing a load of shit, right? Try a load of stuff, fail a load of times. We've both done our share of that. Mm. And you mess around with different things, and then you find, do you know what? I really enjoy this. I'm really passionate. And the money tends to come a lot easier when you're doing something because there's these natural blockades. What I would say about balance, and I'm definitely a bit of a hypocrite with this, and you know that, is you do need to work out how to have a life within that. But for me, like, I'm obsessed with the hustle. So if there's a chance to have another hustle, another grind, another push, another go for it, another sell, another pitch, another ad, whatever it is, versus taking a full day off, I definitely struggle with picking days off sometimes. And it's definitely something I can get better at. But for me, I'm in this constant state of semi-retirement. And what I mean by that is, like, I work 100-hour weeks. I can also work 5 hours. Like, it probably won't impact things that much, but I'm just doing what I'm passionate about. So, you know, you said about Tenerife, it's like you could be out in Tenerife in the villa for a month, it doesn't impact anything. You know, you're still doing your grind. It's just, actually, it's nice going to a gym in hotter weather and going out for meals and stuff like that and going for a little swim in the pool. But that's my idea of blend rather than trying to get the balance. And I don't, my retirement is death. You know, I'm very clear on that. It's like, that is my retirement. You touched on it being made out to be easier than it is. Yeah, it's fucking hard. It's hard, and easy should not be part of your vocabulary ever again. It's simple, not easy. If it were easy, everyone would be doing it. But it's not easy, and that's why most people give up. I think the other reason people give up is everyone puts a timeline on it.
Yes, you know? Very true.
How to quit your job in 30 days. How to do this in 3 months. And actually, most people, if they had a 1 to 3 year vision, 5 year vision, you probably wouldn't give up because you manage it. So I was talking to somebody about how about 2 years to quit in your job if you hate it. It's not a fucking long time, right? And it's just like you go through education for 16 years to get your GCSEs, to go study for 2 years to get your IB or your A levels, to then go study for 3 years to get your undergrad, to then go study for a year or two to get your master's, to then go work somewhere for making a cup of tea for some dickhead 3 years ahead of you. And then you can start earning money. Why is it people think they can get into entrepreneurship and change their entire life in 3 months? Could it happen? For sure. Will it happen? Probably not. And so if people have a longer term mindset about it, then great. The final thing I'd say is, it's such a, and especially in the property space, I've never seen something weirder where people are working so hard to get into something to get out of it. and it's mind-boggling. It's like property, right? I'm trying to get into property and I'm working, I'm hustling so hard for the sole purpose of getting out of property to go and live it. And it's like, how do you expect to be successful with that mindset? It's like, if all your aim is to exit something all the time, you know, how do you have passion? How do you add value? How do you truly have integrity in what you're trying to deliver to your clients? Because we both know that's how you make money, really, right? It's all to do with the client. Sell one thing loads of times or sell something incredibly high value a few times a year. You still need to deliver that focus. And if you're looking at the exit all the time on the way out, you're never present in the moment in any situation.
Yeah, I think it's a real, real powerful sentiment, that is. Like, for me, when I first started like working, right, I knew I was built for something, right? I think you were probably similar to me. We've had conversations of this a lot. Like, I felt like an energy within me, like a hunger that I was built for something more than just a 9-to-5 job. Not that there's anything wrong with it. It was just, it wasn't for me. I knew that like the goals and the objectives that I had in business and in life were a lot bigger than helping somebody else achieve what they wanted to do. And I think that's something that was born from, I guess, my sport background, really, like falling in love with winning rather than anything else. And that was what I've been talking about a lot recently. I did an episode on the podcast probably about 3 weeks ago about the falling in love, you know, with the journey concept that so many people talk about. It's like, you've got to love the process. You've got to love the process. And I agree with it. I think I do definitely agree. You've got to enjoy and embrace that journey. Have the exit in mind, but have that whole purpose of, you know what, I'm here for the long run and actually going to build something that's of worth real value. But I fell in love with the fact and got addicted to, like, you know, I've got a very bad addictive personality, right? It's a positive, but it's also my biggest negative. But I fell in love with winning. Now, it's an odd concept to talk about. I don't hear many people talking about it. Well, actually, business is, I like to call it, basically a big game. And people disagree, people agree. And I don't really mind what their opinion is. But I'd like to get your take on it, because I don't think I've asked you directly before around this whole element, because we work hours and hours and hours and hours and hours. We hustle like there's no tomorrow, right? Because we're wanting to get to a place that's in our head, that's in the future of eventually where we're going to get to. But for me, like, if I can, when I'm at my best is when I detach that emotion from things and go, you know what, no matter what happens to me, like, even when I reach my last dying day, all of this I'm going to look back on. Am I going to look back and go, fuck me, what was I doing? Or I'm going to look back and go, I gave that absolutely everything. I played that really, really well. And it's an odd analogy that, again, I've been speaking about a bit. But I mean, in terms of business being ultimately a game and focusing in on the winning and learning from the losing, I mean, what are your thoughts on that as a specific topic? Because I've not asked anybody about it before.
About addiction within that?
So more about how, like, treating it like it. So, you know, like, people get really, really attached to everything that they do. Like, business, they take everything really, really personally. They treat it like it's life and death situations and put themselves right in the center of the picture. And I only say it because when I did it, I got really, really emotionally attached. It really hurt me as an individual when I went through the property business failure. But obviously, since I've been doing this business, I've really embraced the fact of, you know, everything that happens here is in my control and I've just got to play the game better. So, I mean, I guess my question is, what are your thoughts on treating business rather than life or death, but more like actually a game concept where, yes, you'll lose, but more importantly, it's about getting into that winning mentality and mindset?
Oh, it's a difficult one. There's honestly pros and cons of both, I think. So I'm highly emotional as a character within business, you know, and I do kind of treat it like life or death. You know, you've got to win, you've got to do this, you've got to do that. But, and I think that's really healthy and quite destructive. So where it becomes, and this is where, like, I talk about stoicism and stoic philosophy a lot, is control what you can. You know, you've got controllables and uncontrollables. So if there's 1,000 things going on, I can probably control 5 to 10 of them. So I'm going to get really passionate, really energetic, really emotionally connected, hardcore to those 10 things that I can control. Okay. So that, and I'm going to get addictive around that, you know, do or die mentality. So that's where it's really powerful. The thing where you need to be a little bit less emotional and take it and play it as a game is, out of those 1,000 things, there's now 990, but they're uncontrollables. So should you try and balance that and push away against it and you know, handle those situations for sure, but I'm going to try to let go of the emotion around it. They're uncontrollable situations, you know. So for example, let's say complaining customers, the more, like, it might not go up as a percentage, but let's say 99% of your customers are absolutely buzzing about your service. If you only serve 100 people, which is still a lot, right? But if you serve 100 people, I'm going to focus all of my energy on adding incredible value. But I'm going to understand that there's going to be one person that's upset. I can't control who it's going to be. I can't control that it could be anyone, right? But I can control how I communicate with that person and go, okay, that's brilliant. Let's have a chat about that. You know, let's do this. And you also have to understand that if you get bigger and you suddenly serve 1,000 people, that might be 10 people that kick off. Okay, still only 1%, but your emotions can get tied into that. So let's say they're split evenly over a year. That's almost one person a month. Suddenly it can feel like some people are complaining all the time. Yeah. You know, and it does feel like that. So it's, oh my God, they're complaining. It's like, it's such a small thing, but it's how the brain works, right? If you go on Trustpilot and you look at somebody with 1,000 reviews, you either do one of two things. You either click the 5-star and you read all the good stuff, or more than likely, what you do is you click bad at the bottom and you read the 10 shitty reviews. This is the worst company I've ever worked with, blah, blah, blah. And sometimes your brain goes like that, right? Where you go, wow, that's really bad. That's so negative. And you somehow ignore the 900, like, 5-star reviews, the lives these people have changed. But that's just sometimes what it is. So for me, it's a bit more of a complex yes, then just yes, no. But I'd take the guidance of Stoic philosophy where I'm going to get all in psychotic level of ambition on the things I can control. And I'm going to connect my emotions with that. And I'm going to do my best to divide up my emotions from reality and not so much, you know, kind of not pay any attention. It is what it is with the uncontrollable situations in business in my life.
Love it, mate. Absolutely love it. I just thought, bearing in mind, like, your experience and what you've been doing, like, recently over the last 3 to 4 years. Yeah, I thought it'd be really, really cool to get your view on that. So I appreciate it massively. Now, one of the things you are most definitely is an intense human being, right? You're either all in or you're all fucking out. And yeah, like, that for me is something that I've, being around you actually, I've actually taken as well. It's put me into that mode. And for me, it's been incredibly powerful. What I'd like to take you to is, when you were first starting, like, your first initial business, let's go property. How did you find the idea of property in the first place? And how did you kind of get into it? Because I know you said, and you obviously breathed through your backstory sort of thing, but a lot of people, like, they know, they had that feeling like we did when we were younger, that we're like, we're built for something big here. We know we are. We just have no idea what it is. And you touched upon, like, trying different things and all that sort of thing. I mean, how did you find the industry and how did you kind of get started? What were the steps that you took?
So, I mean, I always loved property, you know, from, like, watching too many episodes of Homes Under the Hammer, you know, the usual thinking these guys are genius, Martin and Lucy. And then my mindset was, oh yeah, well, I'll make a load of money and I'll buy property with it. You know, buy to let, why wouldn't I? And get some cash flow in and all of that. It wasn't about, like, a laptop lifestyle. I never really envisioned that when I was a teenager. But you're right, I always knew I'd make a load of money. And this started, I mean, Dan, obviously, you know, Dan, my mate and business partner. And we went to school with each other. And by, like, 15, we'd be drafting up ideas. So we literally got spreadsheets and went, okay, how can we make money? And literally from love stones, which were us basically going on the beach and finding rocks that looked remotely like a love heart, shine it up and then get etched in somebody's name. That was good. Moon dust, stars, just load of stuff. And then we found arbitrages. So this is when you're trading online. And an arbitrage is a discrepancy in price. Okay. So you can do something in trading called spread betting. And spread betting is you bet on something going up in price or you bet on it going down. And so if you've got a volatile stock, the only time you lose on this is if it hits zero, which is near impossible if you've got a really high fluctuating stock, right? So what we noticed is between these two websites, price fluctuations. So the way it should work, so you could bet to win 25,000. Yeah. So I want to win 25,000 if this price is up from where it starts today.
Yeah.
And they think it's quite likely based on their algorithms, and it costs 20 grand to place that bet. What should happen on the other website, or any website, because the odds should be the same theoretically, right? You make the exact opposite bet. I want to win 25,000. And they go, well, we don't think that's as likely. We'll charge you 5 grand. So you never win, right?
Yeah.
Theoretically. But there was discrepancies. So instead of it being 20 grand, it would be 17,500. And then the other one would be 5 grand. So as long as it didn't go on zero, you won 2.5 grand, guaranteed, or near guaranteed, you know? Mm-hmm. So we found that. And we're just doing them. We started more, built it up every day. Building up. And within a couple of months, one company bought the other company. So we're like, oh, bollocks. But we got into spread betting a lot more. So I started looking into it, coffee, derivatives, gold, the Hang Seng, and just started trading a bit. And again, we tried loads of things. We're talking like, I mentioned a few, but we're talking like 30, 40 things where we made like a couple of hundred quid there, a couple of thousand here. It was all shit. Just hustling, right? Making all these mistakes. And then, and I was at uni at this point now, fast forward to, this was third year of uni, I think. And I sold the trading business, or sold a part of it, that we had this like algorithm, if you like, that we built up, and somebody else had input on that. And we got a lot of money for that age. We're talking around $250,000, right? Which I was 19 years old. I mean, what's a 19-year-old going to do with that? Never had that sort of money. Had the year of my life, right? Pretty much spent the lot, 230 grand in about 10 months. Yeah. And what's worse is I didn't have like a bloody Ferrari or something, or some wicked watch or something. It was just spunked down the junk, mate. It was absolutely useless. And so I had about 20 grand left. And one of my lecturers at uni, he happened to have a small portfolio of property in Burnley. And I was like, all right, okay, that's interesting. And he sort of gave me a talking to, and it was a pretty stern one. It was basically hyping me up, saying I'm amazing and how I've got the potential to change people's lives. Like, really believed in me, really nice guy. Or I'll end up in prison. And he said, and I'll be honest with you, the way you're going right now, I see it being the latter. And I thought, okay, now, you know, it's a pretty cool guy that I'd like look up to in some ways. And he, yeah, as I said, he did property. So I started researching property, couldn't get a mortgage, obviously. And I had about 20 grand left. And so I found a 3-bed mid-terrace property in Burnley. It's number 36 Burdett Street. And I got it for 21,800. Yeah, £21,800. So that's how it all began.
And it was just a domino effect from there, was it?
Yeah, screwed everything up. Screwed everything up, you know. In property, you buy the worst house in the best street. This was the worst house on the worst street in the worst area. You don't try and do the works remotely, but I had no money, right? So when I did that, my mate's dad, who you know, obviously my dad passed away when I was 13, and my best mate's dad, Matt, his dad sort of took me under the wing and was a bit of a father figure to me growing up, and he bought me this shitty old van. So in a toolbox, and went off you go. So I used to finish uni, drive up to Burnley, get works done, drive, you know, and that sort of thing. And then the next door neighbor, whole story around this, probably not the podcast for it, but ripped out the kitchen, nicked the radiators, everything. So I screwed everything up, and actually I just about broke even just selling it, but learned a lot of lessons, and that was hard. That was a hard lesson. That was a hard year of graft as well. Barely slept, sleeping in the back of the van, sleeping in the sleeping bag, like on bloody the floor, freezing cold. But it is what it is. I enjoyed the process of doing it, and the outcome shouldn't change that. You know, and sometimes people do that, like the outcome's negative, therefore the whole thing's negative. It's like, you know what, even if my business failed today, I've had a pretty cool 10 years and I'll start something else, you know, and crack on. But yeah, I learned a lot, got my money back, got educated properly, and just started with one. and turned it around. And then I started with another one and turned that around. Then I got two and turned those around. Then I got two, turned those around. Then it was three. And it builds up and it builds up. And, you know, compounding is an incredibly powerful thing. And it's hard for the brain to comprehend true compounding over time, your investment, all of that. But, you know, there's a reason why they say it's the eighth wonder of the world, right?
Totally, mate. Totally. And I think it actually leads off quite well. So in terms of the way that I'll switch that back into, I guess, the branding and marketing stuff that we talk about, right, is I've been in the property world. I still invest like small little bits and pieces. I still trade a little bit from learning from you as well. And one of the things that I've noticed, especially in property, but it also applies to every business, is the ability to be able to raise finance, right? So it's all right finding deals, but if you've got no money, like you say, you run out of money, you're fucked. Let's be quite straight to the point on this, right? Totally screwed. So you have to build a brand. You have to become known and you have to be able to get yourself out there to the world so they can funnel money towards you. Bearing in mind you were so young, like when you started, really started, how on earth did you find the ability to be able to scale? Because, okay, yes, back then you were starting from scratch, but you've built one hell of an empire and you're going to need funding to be able to do that. I'm assuming. How did you start building that brand and build that credibility up to be able to actually scale a company which needs a lot of investment coming into it?
Well, yeah, I mean, first of all, it takes time. Sorry, that's a loud
ambience. What happens when you live in Leeds, folks?
First of all, it takes time, you know. And like I said earlier, if you can get out of that mindset of it's going to take 3 months, 6 months, it probably took me a good 6 months to get my first investor, proper investor, not somebody going, here's a couple of grand, or a family member going, here's a bloody sandwich, you know, in my family. And, you know, it takes time, commitment. But you mentioned you were so young. People's mindset needs to shift around that. It was because I was so young that I actually secured my first investor.
Okay. Yeah?
And so the first thing when people are doing branding, marketing, things like that, is that kind of mindset. So Chris, I'm going to close this up. The one thing around that mindset is that just because you're young doesn't mean you're stupid. Just because you're young doesn't mean that somebody older than you is better than you. Just because you're young doesn't mean you don't have something to give. You know, I was 19. I was a fucking idiot, being blunt about it. Screwed up a lot. But I still cared about people. I had energy. I had passion. I was diligent. I threw myself at situations. And a big core part of my values is integrity, right? And so people bought into that. And, you know, but physically, when I was 19, I looked a young 19 as well. Like I can just about grow bomb fluff on my face now and I'm 29, you know. But, you know, it took time. It took dedication. But you have to put yourself out there. So for me, it was, well, how can I build awareness for myself? How can I build credibility? What is it I've got that somebody else doesn't? So it's called your USP, right? Your unique selling point. And everyone has one. Everyone has one. Now, the truth is, there's no USP, or they're very, very unlikely to be a USP in your product. There's very unlikely a USP in your service, even though you really want to know, we're the only one, we're the best one. No, you're not the best. You will never be the best, because being the best requires you to be the best in all angles. And it's not going to happen. There might be five angles to your product or service, and you might be the best at two. And that's okay. You don't need to be the best. So how do you put it out there? How do you show people what your strengths are? How do you communicate that effectively to the outer world? How do you build awareness? How do you communicate? How do you engage properly with them? And how do you grow from there? And that's all I did. I turned up daily. Every day I turn up. And at the start, you have to put in more than when you're bigger. You know, now I might be able to do a Facebook Live and raise a million. Whereas at the start, that would take maybe a year to do that. The other thing I always had in my head is you only need one yes. So, you know, people look at rejection like it's a terrifying thing. And, you know, the odds are you'll get rejected 7, 8 out of 10 times. So what? Like, who gives a shit? And, like, you know, it's understand it. It's a rejection of your pitch, a rejection of your product, a rejection of your service, not a rejection of you as a human being. It doesn't mean you are shit. It's your product shit, your pitch was shit, your service shit. So what? Everyone sucks at the beginning. You know, I talk from stage now with relative ease, I would say. But my first speech was an absolute catastrophe. It was awful, right? And you have to be shit to get good. You have to do your first in order to do your last. And you have to build it up. If you think about the iPhone, right? Every single time the iPhone comes out, it's full of glitches. And then they get feedback on all of those glitches. And then they iterate and update the software. And, you know, that's just what happens over time. So it was about time. It was about pushing. It's finding my USP as best as possible. And then raising awareness. And then I just knew all it took was one person. I don't care about all these people that decided they didn't want to work with me because of rage. Because you're going to have that, right? You're gonna, if people don't like the way you look, they won't work with you, some people, because of your age. If you're a bloke, if you're a woman, if you're black, if you're white, you know, shit happens in the world. There's still racism, there's still sexism. It's horrible, but it's uncontrollable for you right now. So if you're in that segment, well, fuck working with them. There's plenty of people that are not arseholes in the world and aren't going to make judgments based on those sort of ridiculous things. So find that USP, put yourself out there, and just stay connected to the fact that in any business, you only need one customer to bankroll the rest. And it goes from there. One testimonial to show people, I've got validation now, and you build it up from that.
I love that. I absolutely love it. I think you are leading me on to my questions brilliantly, by the way. Absolutely brilliant.
Oh, that's good.
Because you said about putting yourself out there. And for me, obviously, I talk about that. We've worked together quite a lot, right? It's all about being in the right place at the right time. And the only way that you can do that is by consistently showing up, talking about the right things. Now, I've started to talk about this a lot recently. And again, I don't see many people talking about it, is the power of strategic relationships to help the overall positioning of a brand, right? So when you're starting, it can be quite a lonely place and it can be really, really difficult to get people to listen to you because it's like, what have I really got to say, sort of thing? Like, it's who is really going to listen to me? How can I actually get people to listen to me? And I know your story. I know how you, like, some of the parts of it anyway, of how you've got to where you've got to and the brand that you've built. And I know strategic relationships and partnerships have been really, really powerful to that. But what I want to touch upon is you did a lot of public speaking, okay? And you worked with a strategic partner and you leveraged their brand, but you also did a lot of sacrifice. And this is the thing that I want to get people to buy into, because now people can look at it from the outside of the education company that you've built, the property business that you've built. And they must think, oh God, it's easy for him. He just spends a couple of grand on ads and boom, he's got all of this credibility. He's got all these people buying from him. Oh God, I just need to do that. But what they don't see from what you've done is the hours, the sacrifice that you did. Like, for let's be honest here, not very much money at the beginning of things. You sacrificed, I think, a year of your life, pretty much 2 years of your life, to build a brand for yourself to be seen. And I just would like, just if you could, just to talk to me about, like, your thinking behind doing that right at the beginning, because that's a huge sacrifice. You were traveling hundreds of miles, dedicating a lot of days to build the brand. So it was obviously important to you. But what was the reasoning behind it? And what are your thoughts around strategic partnerships in the way that you got started?
I'm trying to think of an analogy as you're saying this, right? Imagine you're going to war, right? It's a bit of an aggressive analogy, but bear with me here, right? And the idea is you just want to attack, right? You want to protect yourself. You want to be the survivor at the end. The problem with having that mindset, like from the off, go, go, attack, kill people, whatever it is in the thing. At the start, you've got a little water pistol. So it's like, look, it's inevitable. You're going to be able to do some damage. I don't know, spray somebody in the eye a little bit. I don't know. But you turn around with water pistol. This is, bear with me, guys. This is going to get better, right? But your weapon is your brand, okay? And that's kind of my angle right now. It's sort of like, so I'm making money. It's trying to shoot, okay? And yeah, you can do that. But, you know, talking about spend a couple of grand, do you know how many couple of grands I've spent that hasn't worked? Mm. What about the first couple of grand where that couple of grand was every penny to my name, you know, and all of that? So, yeah, people do look from the outside all the time and they go, oh, it's all right for you. But that's cool. That's nothing on me. That's a representation of their mindset, right? But whilst I'm suffering, or I'm not suffering, there's that exchange there where, did I make some money whilst I was doing that? Yeah. Was it a reflection of my value? Absolutely not. But it did give me the brand. It gave me a little bit of a pedestal. It gave me confidence, you know. I was learning how to be more of a professional speaker. Professional loosely used there, but like, you know, a better communicator and stuff like that on, frankly, somebody else's dime. You know, somebody else's brand. So that actually I had everything to gain and nothing to lose from that. So by utilizing other people around you, you know, whether that's on some sort of joint venture basis, whether it's doing something like this, right, a podcast, you utilize, you're using my brand and thinking, you know what, I can, like, some of Jamie, I'll get KD, my PA, to promote this, and that's going to bring in some of Jamie's followers. And there'll be people that you know from your brand that have never heard of me before. And some of those might go, you know what, he sounds like not a complete dickhead. I might go and follow him on his platform. You don't know. It's all these collaborations, right? So was there sacrifice? For sure. Do I see it as a sacrifice? Absolutely not. And that's because my weapon now is a AK-47, right? And I'm going to sacrifice more, and I'll have a bloody bazooka, a sniper, whatever bloody, I don't know, if we're going back to Call of Duty, the bloody ray gun, right? And it's like, but now I'm going out, and because my gun's more powerful, it has more impact. So the difference that sacrifice has created is I can create a video. And here's the thing, right? You could, I'm not saying you, but somebody else with less sort of brand behind them could do a Facebook Live and deliver the exact same words that I do. But because I've got that brand behind me, I will raise more money. I will have more impact. I'll have more positive feedback from the same content. Okay. So at a certain point, and that's the difference between great content and a great brand, is that I could put out something. You've seen it, right? Gary Vaynerchuk, a great example. He's got some insane level content, and he's great overall. He could also post a picture of him going, that's it, and going, sup, and he'll have 100,000 engagements. And it's like, we added no value there. Absolutely no value. But he added value the last 10 years. You know, Gary, you could do some bullshit daily vlog on YouTube that adds zero entertainment now, zero value. Like, a lot of them are crap. You'll still have hundreds of thousands of people watching them because of the value is added and consistency is added over years. So is it a short term? Is it sacrifice? For sure. But it's definitely short term. And I'm going to, and short term for me is I'd easily put in 5 years with relatively little payoff, you know. And when I'm saying relatively, I mean, don't get me wrong, I still want to earn some money, but as long as I'm getting 30, 40, 50 grand a year, so I can pay my way and enjoy money, I'm cool with that. If I had massive exposure, say for example, now, like where I'm at a stage where I'm getting an ops manager and stuff like that. If I could go and be Richard Branson's bitch for 6 months, and the only thing that he paid me with is an hour a month with him to ask him questions, and he allowed me to do some podcasts with him, do you think I'd do that? Absolutely. Of course I would, but I'm not getting paid for it, right? And it's the same with this strategic alignment with the business. At the start, and I mean like the first year, I probably gave about, bear in mind at this stage, I was earning couple of grand a day easy from my businesses, and I was probably putting about 80 days for that company the first year, and I made 10 grand. So
it's big, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it gives you an idea. I mean, that's crazy, right? But
it makes complete sense. And for me, like, you know, when you spoke about compounding, right, the eighth wonder of the world, right? It works same with attention in my eyes and brand building. It's like, when you first start, nobody's going to be able, most likely, listen. No one will hear you. But if you actually start showing up in the right places where there are audiences already there with a really, really key significant message that makes you stand out from everybody else, knowing that USP that you spoke to, deliver it day in, day out. not worrying about who's listening, not worrying about who's paying, but doing it day in, day out, over time, like investing, that compound effect is going to generate you a return. And at the beginning, it will be small, but day after day, month after month, year after year, that compounds into something bigger. And you've got to be strategic in the way that you do it. But compounding, for me, just like you mentioned in investing, the eighth wonder of the world for absolutely anything, which is having a positive action of the way our lives work. So yeah, I just think it was awesome, mate. It was awesome.
Yeah, it's huge. And like a simple way of thinking about this is like network marketing, right? So when you invest your money, if I lend 100 grand to somebody and they pay me 10% or whatever it is, then I get back 110, right? So my money has made money. And this is like the richest man in Babylon, right? But then if I lend out the 110 grand, so my money's making money, but then my money's money is now having more babies. They're bloody going for it, right? And now that's making money. And it's the same as people. If even if this has five people listening to this that think I'm slightly above useless, and they go, do you know what? I'm gonna share this. And you know, I'm going to post on Jamie's thing. I'm going to do a post saying you should listen to this. And then say for each of those five people, five more people listen to it. That's 25 people. And let's say 10 people out of those 25 post it, and five people, that's then 50 people. And it can go exponential. So all you need is a couple of tiers of that network marketing effect for something to go viral. And you don't know what video it's going to be. You just don't know. But some of them explode. And I've had some on YouTube, right, where like my average video, I don't know, it might get between 3,000 and 5,000 views. But there's also one that's on 120,000 now and has got, I've got, at the time of filming, like 28,000 subs, something like that. I'd say about 8,000 of them are from one video. Crazy. And wow. Yeah, and there's over 100 videos there now, just over 100 videos done now. So it's like, but one video, so 1% of my videos represents, say, 25% of my subs.
Mm. I absolutely love it. I think it's insane with the way that effect really works. And like I say, YouTube there, you've used an awesome example of it. Now, I always get this question a lot, especially at this point when we're having these sorts of conversations with people. It's like, yes, get visible, get out there, be on every platform as much as you possibly can. Although I know we dispute, it's about being strategic with the platforms that you choose and who you partner with, right? But the biggest thing is knowing what to say. And one of the things I've always noticed about you is how good you are at communicating, right? So I know you've been doing this for a while and we all have to start somewhere. I guess my question is kind of twofold, really. One, how do you know what to say? And I think that's where we should start with it. How do you actually work out what to create and what to post? Because it sounds so easy, go and post on Facebook or go and do a podcast with someone. But how do you find out and how do you detail out what you need to talk about?
Okay, that is a really good question. So first of all, it's slightly different for each platform, okay? So you need to understand YouTube is not a social media platform. It's a search engine. Okay. So the easiest, well, Google owns it, but it is Google for video. And that's really important to understand. And that's why videos can just go. So that 120K video, it probably gets like 1,000 views a day. It was posted 6 months ago. You don't have that on social media.
No.
Like you don't have it. It's, you've got a few days and then it's gone. Yeah, like it's very rare somebody's commenting on a video from 6 months ago, right? It just doesn't happen. So you need to be a bit more strategic on that. Instagram's a little less strategic, I would say, than YouTube, but you still need strategy around it because you need to understand, I'll tie all this together. And then Facebook is kind of the easiest, I think, with Facebook Lives and stuff like that. So how do I know what to talk about? Well, first of all, I don't think about what I'm going to talk about. I think about what outcomes do I want. So let's stick with YouTube and just use it as a relevant example. Why do I want a subscriber? Okay, why do I want somebody to view my videos? Well, probably three reasons. I want them to watch because I genuinely want to add value to people. Okay, that doesn't really guide me on the content, so let's forget that one. The next one is, I want to attract people that want to invest with me. So investors, okay, cool, for my property business. and I want to attract people into my education business. Okay, great. So now I know that. So what businesses do I want? Property, specifically property. Now, if you look at my YouTube video and you look at my first 10 videos, there was about taking my phone off of me for a day whilst we were in Ibiza. And actually, you were with me, Chris, right? Mm-hmm. And so I take my phone off me whilst I was out in Ibiza, talking about mindset, why I exercise and how I think it impacts me, planning out my year, property investment, personal finances. The problem with that and being so eclectic and wide on YouTube is always ask yourself, why would somebody subscribe? The problem with that is I've got a subscriber that likes me with my top off in Ibiza. I've got a subscriber that likes the idea of mindset. I've got a subscriber that likes exercise. And so the issue with that is I'm not consistently posting about with my top off or with, not that many people subscribe for that. There might be one and a lot of dislikes.
Nice counting here, folks.
Yeah. Like for those people searching me now, I apologize if you were expecting a decent rig. But it's like, so, you know, and then people follow me for exercise. Well, I don't post regularly about that. So the problem with that is that will lead to two things. It will lend itself to unsubscribers, mm-hmm. and it will lend itself to subscribers not watching my videos, which lends itself to telling YouTube, the algorithm, that not even my subscribers like my videos. So why would they show it to more people, right? And so I only did that for a couple of months, and you should always analyze back. So then I realized that people wanted the educational videos. Okay, great. So what do they want? So I'm just very focused on creating educational videos where I don't want to pitch. I've got a value first mindset, so I never pitch on there ever. At worst, I go, oh, by the way, if you're interested in finding out more, put education in the comments. Or another one I'll say is put APG in the comments if you want hands-free property investment. That's it. Otherwise, it's all value. So then I ask myself, what USPs do I have? Well, in our industry, it's that I'm actually doing loads of deals. You'd be shocked how many trainers don't do deals. Yeah. They make their money from education, which, you know, whatever. I think if they disclose that, that's cool. But we're doing, as I said, 100 grand a month now fairly consistently. Apart from last month, we did 75. But every month, we're doing over 100 pretty much. So that's a USP. So I do videos of property reviews where I'm going to my properties that I'm buying or packaging on and doing a bit of a unique video. So now that I know the outcome of what I'm looking to achieve, it gives me and I've reviewed and analyzed some of the videos. And by the way, fuck up a few times, post some videos that absolutely are shit. Number one, you learn from it. Number two, remove it if you want. Now I've not removed any videos, but will I in the future? I don't know. You know, maybe. But you just learn from it and you develop, okay? And as long as you're focusing on creating great content when you're going out there, looking at the feedback, look on YouTube Studio, get the statistics. Same as every platform, by the way, insights on Instagram. Yeah, same thing. You know, if you've got a business account, you can check all of that out. When are people engaging? When are people on? You know, so for YouTube, I know that I want it to link properly. I know that most of my followers go on YouTube the most at 5 p.m. So I post at 3. So it gives it, or 3:15, I think. So it gives it the initial hardcore that go on and watch it, gives it time to link with the back channels on YouTube, and then it's live properly within a couple of hours. So that's when I'm doing it. So I'm being strategic around that. I notice they're engaging with the more basic level content, buy to let basics, how to get your first rent to rent, how to package your first deal, all of that. And that's how I'm doing it. So the general recommendation is how to videos for the first, you know, a couple of thousand, how to do this, how to do that, keeping it simple. Then the final two things that I'd say about it is, number one, don't talk about shit you don't know about. I know, the mind boggles, right? but seriously, yeah, that I'll just leave now. It's not getting better than that. But seriously, it's so obvious when you see people talking about shit they don't know about. It really is. And people can sense it from the way you communicate, yeah? So you can't keep eye contact, or hold on a sec, and they're looking at notes all the time. So only talk about what you know about. And if you don't know a lot, document. You know, what do you do today? What do you learn from it? So I used to do a video series on Facebook called Fuck Up Fridays, right? Where literally I just document my week. And at the end of the week, I just go, guys, I just want to share the three biggest cock ups I've made this week. And I tell them what I cocked up on, how much it cost me, and what I learned from it, and how I'm going to make sure it never happens again. Perfect. Hope you enjoyed your Fuck Up Friday. You know, something like that. So I think it was, I don't know if it was actually, it might have been Gary Vaynerchuk that said, document, don't create. You know, if you're ever struggling with producing content, it works wonders. You know, what did I do this week? What was the hardest thing I went through this week? People love emotions, you know. It's the facts tell, stories sell sort of thing. People don't remember what you told them. They remember how you made them feel. So by documenting something and thinking about the biggest win, the hardest thing that you went through this week, people will emotionally connect to that, especially with your fuckers, because number one, people love your fucking up. And number two, people connect with it more. It makes them feel better about themselves and all of their screw-ups. So, yeah, I kind of went off on one there, but hopefully that's...
It's really, really good, actually. It leads me on to my final question, actually, which for me is what I really want to make this podcast really, really about. And it's about success, right? And we have so many different people out there telling us what to do, why we need to do it, the secret formula, the secret this, the secret that. And for me, everyone's got their own opinion on things, which is amazing stuff. And you've actually gone out there and generated success in whatever way that you want to inverted comma that in any way. What do you think is like the number one fundamental thing that you've done that's contributed to the success of the businesses and the empire and the success that you've had?
I hate those questions, mate. It's so hard to narrow it down to one thing. It is. So, look, starting out, I'm not going to give you one thing, mate. I'm not going to be cornered. I'm not going to be cornered in here.
I mean, I could give you what I believe it is for you, but you go. Go on, go.
Starting out, okay, there's the fluffy stuff, like I could talk about passion, drive, all of that shit. Of course, that's obvious. When you're starting out, you need to create an offer, okay, that brings something to the table, focus on the value of it, and then organically validate that. What that means is don't start spunking on ads and all of that. Go out there, build awareness, communicate with people, and get those fuckers paying for something. All you need is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 paying for something to validate your offer. Validating means you have got proof that somebody will pay for this. Okay, that's stage one. Then you focus on fulfillment, which is fulfilling incredible value from that. And then and only that, and it's a constant cycle, by the way, get feedback, recommit, reassociate everything within your offer, revalidate. Then you can revalidate at higher prices. Only then does it really come down to three things for growth. Okay. And this is outside of the passion around it. Okay. Consistency. Consistently turning up, consistently adding value, consistently dealing with problems, consistently trying to find a better way. Not being perfect, just be better. Number two is people. Surround yourself with great people, great connections, great associations, great employees that turn up and want to add value and share the same values as you grow and as you go forward. Number three, processes. Okay, processes, systems that allow people to grow and self-validate in their position. And as long as you've got a great product and you're going out with that serving attitude and you've got great people around you, great processes, and you consistently turn up, success is inevitable. Boom.
I'm not going to give you one. That's what he said. I'm not going to give you one. There you go. I see you love it, man. No, it's good. I think for me, what a great way to end what I think has been an absolute awesome interview, to be fair. What a great way to start. You did not disappoint, my friend. Did not disappoint.
Oh, good, good. Well, like I said, you only make me look better, mate. So
it's not hard, is it, really? I mean, look at the standards that are being set right now. I mean, where can people find you, mate? Is YouTube the best place to come and connect with you? Is Instagram, where's the place, best place to find
you? Yeah, look, if you're looking for decent content, you know, highly curated content, around property investment and growth mindset, then YouTube's definitely a place. Just Jamie York on YouTube. And if you just want to chat about business and growth in general, then Instagram's definitely the best for that, which is Jamie York Aspire. And yeah, anyone you want to reach me out, you can hit me up. Don't worry, I'm not going to pitch you anything. Well, I probably will.
Probably will eventually.
But yeah, like if people want to hook up, get in touch, that's the way to go.
Amazing stuff, mate. I appreciate your time. Remember, guys, if you are not currently subscribed to Straight to the Point, please make sure that you are. This is going live on my YouTube channel and also on Spotify, iTunes, and any of the other major platforms that you listen to. Jamie York, thank you very, very much.
No worries, man. Good to be on.
Massively, and I will speak to you all very, very soon.